Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
And hey, welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Final hour of the day. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rexroad, Marquise Munson taking you through this Wednesday morning. That was fun. We had a lot of topics we didn't get to. Some people are texting in some topic ideas of their own. This is good stuff.
Okay.
I'm excited.
Hey, see, and this is a work in progress.
Yeah,
so
we just kind of made it
up. If you want to text us stuff for this or tweet us, we may tweet it out like a day before.
Sure.
And then, like, maybe
take the best ones.
We'll take the best ones and then we'll read them off air.
So that means Robbie's ideas might get thrown to the side, though.
No, I
just launched it. That's fine.
I'm cool
with my ideas getting thrown to the side.
He launched the idea. I came up with the title, and we can allow listener interaction.
And Joe did nothing.
And
old man Joe just shows up.
Hey, I put cameo jokes in the chat with friends.
Well, to see you.
We all have our role in society.
We've all benefited from that today. Yes, it's been a good show for old man Joe. Got made fun of by Vrabel. Totally forgot his train of thought, about ruined his daughter's birthday surprise. I mean, we're on a roll today.
But I had the right answers in the Choice Is Yours segment.
Did you?
Yeah. I was right on every one of them.
Okay, well, that's good. That's good to know. Is there like some sort of
objective judge
that's done this?
I mean, well, it's just obvious.
Okay.
And I'll be right here again.
That's fine. All right, so we're going to pick our playoff teams in the AFC as sort of a season prediction look ahead. And, Joe, I want to see if we go differently at all from each other on this list. So we'll just start off. Are we going 1-6 or 1-7? When's that new playoff? Is that coming in this year? Is that next year? When is that? Have they decided that? It's next year, right?
Yeah, it's not this year.
So we're going 1-6 in the AFC. So let's start off with the easy one, because I think 1-2 for both of us probably going to be the same. Don't know that, but I'm pretty sure it'll be the same. I'll start off with my 1-2, Kansas City, Baltimore, in that order. Do you agree or disagree?
I do. I will say that I think about that with Baltimore being 1, Kansas City 2, but
that's how it was last year.
That's how it was last year. People forget that. But, yeah, I'll go with that. I will agree with you there.
So I'm going to go at 3. Now, this could be me being accused of being a homer, but I'm a Packers fan, so this is not really me being a homer. Titans at 3. I think the Titans are going to be 3 this year in the AFC, assuming, you know, they stay healthy, away from COVID, all that stuff. We finish the season. I've got the Titans at 3. I think this is their year to win the division. I like their roster. I like their makeup. I like a lot of things about this team. The next step for this group is to win the AFC South. I think this is the year they get it done. Unfortunately for them, this could be the year they win the AFC South, and having the home playoff game really doesn't mean a whole heck of a lot. Hopefully we get to a place where it does mean something, but I'm going to put the Titans at 3 as making the playoffs in the AFC.
I'm with you. So we'll just call this a homer segment now, but I agree. I think that they are the clearest choice for 3 team in the AFC. I mean, if you want to go around and make cases for other teams, you know, you can look at the Buffalo Bills, the great defense, and I like the addition of Diggs there. You can look at, in this division, you can look at the Colts. There are certainly people who are picking the Colts to win the South. I still like the Texans, and I'm not sure that I don't like the Texans more than the Colts. It's very close. I mean, quarterback is just – that's the story there, if Phillip Rivers is going to be good enough.
Had a great video of him come out on Twitter the other day, throwing a pass from the line of scrimmage. I guess the receiver ran the wrong route, and he's just screaming, "Dead gummit, flatten the route.
He is he's a big complainer. He's a big yeller at other guys.
Watching him play, I'm sure he's a nice guy, but watching him play on the field, he's very unlikable. At least in my opinion.
I mean, you know who actually was also like that and yet still likable is Peyton Manning.
Peyton complained a lot
when guys would run the wrong route. But again, like, there's also a certain amount of credibility when you're that great.
Yeah, like, you run the
Phillip
right
Rivers doesn't quite have that. No, I don't want to diminish. Phillip Rivers has had a great career. He's a great quarterback. But, Yeah, he's a little bit too much like that. Let me hold on now. I want to make sure. Are we sure that we're not going 7 this year?
Now you've got me in my head thinking, so I don't know.
I thought it was after.
We can figure this out. I mean, I could go to 7 if we need to go to 7.
Yeah, we can go to 7 for the – okay. Yeah, all right. We were wrong. I for some reason, why did I think it wasn't until 2021 season?
That's the 17-game schedule that kicks in after that.
Which is so stupid, but yeah, okay, all right. So we'll add a team.
That's fine. I'll add a team. I don't care. We can go all day on this.
We're still not there yet. But so far, we're exactly in the same spot.
All right. So at number 4 in the AFC, in the AFC East, coming out for the first time in a very long time, I do not have the New England Patriots. I do have the Buffalo Bills, and I'll be honest with you, Joe. I don't feel great about it because it's the Buffalo Bills, and it's almost like predicting the Cleveland Browns to do something. Yeah, you look at their team on paper, and they probably should, but then you realize at the end of the day, it's the Cleveland Browns. I feel the same way about Buffalo. Like, you watch that division with Brady out in New England, like 9 guys opting out. The roster wasn't that great last year offensively to begin with. Cam Newton coming in. Like, there's just so many question marks with New England. That division, the Jets are awful. Miami, I think, has some nice pieces, and I think they're a couple years away from being good. The Buffalo Bills should win this division with no problem whatsoever. Part of me still thinks they're going to find a way to screw it up. And, like, Miami is going to come win the division. But I, for the sake of this discussion, I have the Bills number 4.
I do, too. And it's that defense. It's just a reliable week-after-week unit that's going to be one of the best in the NFL. And so
and probably good enough to carry them. Josh Allen, who I don't think is very good.
I don't either. But he's – you know, makes some plays, runs around, has a big arm, misses easy, obvious throws that NFL quarterbacks can't miss, but I still have them coming out of the East, too.
All right, at number 5, who do you have at number 5?
Okay, yeah, now this is
where it could get a little interesting.
It is, and, you know, there's a lot of teams that I think, and I will say a team you just mentioned, I am going to have in my playoff field, you may not, but number 5, I'm going to go with the Steelers.
That was a nice dramatic pause.
It's tough. But
I had them at number 5, too. I can't believe you said that.
Oh, man. I mean, Roethlisberger back, and he's old. And talk about Rip Van Winkle. But you look at that team, what they did last year. I like Mike Tomlin a lot. I like a lot of what they have on defense, and I just think you put Roethlisberger on the field, and if he can be him, be close to what he's been, then that's a – like a 10-win kind of team, I think. They went 8-8 last year. So there's a certain amount of reliability and culture with that franchise that has me – it's a part of this too. So I've got them at 5.
I also have Pittsburgh at number 5. And the reason for that is basically this. They almost made the playoffs last year with absolutely nobody at quarterback. Like Duck Hodges was playing at quarterback. So if Roethlisberger can stay – even partially healthy for the majority of this season, I think they're going to be good enough elsewhere. I still love their defense. I think Mike Tomlin's a really good coach. I like James Conner, Juju Smith-Schuster. I like a lot of the pieces that Pittsburgh has. I've got them at number 5 as well. Now, at number 6, this is where I've got a little curveball for you. I'm going Denver Broncos, number 6. I would guess you don't have them in your playoff picture.
They are – that's an interesting pick, and I don't hate it. I won't have them in my field, though. So there's we finally have departed from each other.
We have. Denver Broncos at number 6, and I'll round it out the Houston Texans at number 7 on my list. I just think with the losses they've had, Deshaun Watson is great. But bringing in, you know, the weapons they have now, they still got – they have Kenny Stills at wide receiver. You bring in – you know, Johnson at running back. Like, okay. It just doesn't do it for me. I don't think they're going to be good enough. I think like 7-9 this year.
They do have Houston. Brandon Cooks.
They do.
I mean,
and he's, yeah.
What happens with the Texans? If Will Fuller is healthy and you've got the burner out there to go with everything else, they're still scary to me. Will he be healthy? I mean, it's right now.
We have a lot of evidence.
Yeah, a lot of evidence that you can at least expect him to miss about half the year. But I'm still going Texans.
At 6.
At 6, and it's largely just my belief in Watson. And, you know, the David Johnson thing, it's an awful trade. You're taking that contract on. You're getting rid of DeAndre Hopkins. It's awful. I will say that David Johnson catching the ball in the backfield and a healthy David Johnson, with all the negativity about the move and after all these injuries he's had, he could be one of those breakout kind of surprise players in this league. And if you consider that impact on their offense, and again, Cooks, Stills, Fuller, I mean, they've got some weapons for what I think is a special quarterback. That's why I've got them six, and I'm going Colts seven.
Colts
so
seven.
I'm
okay.
Not only
so
a
you
Titans,
believe in Phillip Rivers,
not only a Titans homer, AFC South homer with these picks. It's not – Phillip Rivers is – look, I like so much of what else they did. I love the DeForest Buckner signing for their defense, exactly what they needed. I love the Jonathan Taylor draft pick and Pittman. Those rookies are going to help an offense that already has a terrific offensive line. I mean, Marlon Mack is an underrated player. T.Y. Hilton's still making plays. The Titans know this well. I think Phillip Rivers is going to be good enough and still an upgrade over Jacoby Brissett that they will be like a 9-7 team.
Okay. I could see that. Now, I was the reason I have Denver in there, number one, they went 7-9 last year, so they weren't as bad as I think people think they were. You bring in Jarrell Casey, Jerry Jeudy, who I think is an absolute stud.
He's special.
I think he is going to be a really good wide receiver in this league. And then you look at the division – outside of the Chiefs, which you can chalk up as two losses for the Broncos, Raiders are not that great. Chargers, I think, are going to be really bad this year. I mean, you could – I'm not going to say you could guarantee four wins there. I think it's not out of the realm of possibility Broncos win three or four of those games. So that's – I mean, you got a head start right there. So that's the reason I'm going with the Broncos ahead of the Colts, because I think the path is easier for them.
So you just disrespect Oregon quarterbacks, because when Mariota takes over with the Raiders and when Justin Herbert comes in week three for the Chargers.
I've seen enough Oregon quarterbacks.
The Ducks are going to flap their wings.
No, Joey Harrington? Nah.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. Okay, then. Oh. I've seen enough Oregon quarterbacks.
I think you make some good points there if those teams are as bad as they might be. I mean, the thing is, I actually like the Chargers other than we don't know about quarterback. You know, I think they actually have a lot of good pieces, but, yeah, you just don't know. And I think the Broncos are due for a resurgence. They are definitely a team I thought of there. I love the Casey addition. Casey's going to be so motivated to
that week one game.
Wrong.
Oh, I feel bad for the Titans O-line because – they may be able to handle him, but he is going to be on a different level in that game week one against the Titans.
No doubt. Now, of course, and I don't know what Denver's situation is, but it's also – it's Monday Night Football. It's the opener. It's Casey. Normally, it's like that crowd is just going to be
– rocking.
I don't know what Denver's situation with maybe no crowd. But still, Casey will be thrashing around and making plays, and he'll be tough to block. They're a very interesting team. You know, quarterback for them is – that's also just like with all these teams. You start there, and Drew Lock, well, you know, what's he going to be?
Yeah, that is the big question with them. What is Drew Lock? I remember last year when they started training camp, they were like, yeah, Drew Lock, he was awful today. Just came out and said it was Vic Fangio. He's like, yeah, just not good. It's like, good Lord, this kid just got in practice. Give him a break a little bit there, Coach.
Yeah.
My goodness.
Early on.
He's ripping him.
Yeah, early on it was just like, yeah, he's not even close to getting on the field. But I've always liked him.
I think he's a good player.
He's going to like having a Jerry Jeudy out there for sure.
No question about it. When we come back, we will dive back into the Titans discussion. What are we expecting from Corey Davis and Adoree Jackson this year? That's next. This is Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Corey, John Robinson told us that he had a conversation with you around the time that they decided not to pick up your fifth-year option. How did you react to that news, and what's your focus in what's essentially a contract year?
I mean, it wasn't really a reaction worth, talking about. It was just, you know, he told me what they were going to do and what direction they were going to go in, and, you know, I just took it, you know, as it was, handled it like a professional, I feel, and, you know, I'm just focusing on me and this team. I'm obviously still a Titan for another year. Got a lot to improve on, so I'm just focusing on getting better and, you know, doing what I can to help his team out.
That was Corey Davis talking about his contract situation, and a great question from Teresa Walker of the Associated Press. Welcome back in Morning Drive. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexrode.
Somebody's professional on those calls, at least, huh? Somebody's professional on the Titans media.
Does Teresa respond to the chat?
Sometimes.
Okay.
But usually she leaves it to
you,
the less mature.
The class clown.
Vrabel's not calling
the class clown over here, Joe Rexrode.
Vrabel loves some Teresa.
Yep.
Who doesn't?
That's right. First question every time, as it should be.
That's right. Well, you hear Corey Davis respond to that, and I think he handled that question pretty well from what you would expect him to say. But I do think there is some significant pressure on him this year, and it's not that that's any different than normal. There's always been pressure on Corey Davis since he was selected fifth overall in the draft. I know I've adjusted my expectations. Joe, I'm sure you have as well. But I think from a Titans fan standpoint, sometimes it's hard to get past where you were drafted. I mean, he's never going to get past with some people that he was drafted fifth overall, and that's just something he's not going to be able to overcome. I don't really ever see at this point him living up to being the fifth overall pick in the draft. But I agree with what Eric Bacharach said earlier in the show when we had him on from the Tennessean. If he can duplicate a year that he had in his sophomore season, where I think he had like 65 catches, around 800 yards, 5 touchdowns, and some of those touchdowns, really big touchdowns, by the way, like the Philly game. If he could do something similar to that and A.J. Brown takes that next step that we believe he's going to take, I think you can live with that if you're the Titans. I think all of a sudden your passing game, when you factor in A.J. Brown, Jonnu Smith, hopefully Adam Humphries is able to stay healthy. If Corey Davis has a year like he had a couple years ago, I think if you were asking the Titans whether or not they'd sign up for that right now, I think their answer would be yes.
Yeah, and I really don't think – of course there's pressure because it's a contract year, but I think it's a very different pressure. And I think you hit it there with I've adjusted my expectations. I think when you don't get the option picked up and then, you know, the production that happened last year happens, I think most people have moved on from the what, you know, why the heck did they take him number five? Look, it's going to be part of John Robinson's draft record. And Davis, I agree with you, will not live up to being the number five pick. He's not that kind of a talent. And again, maybe he could have been or could be with full health, but he's not had that. He's had one nagging injury after another. I think that this is – I really think that all these factors set up well for him this year to have a good year and be a good, solid two, which is probably what he is in this league, and earn himself a solid deal here or somewhere else after this. And there's a little bit of prove it to everybody because you didn't get dropped and picked up. Although, again, he had a good answer to Teresa there on the question. It was a good question. I just can't imagine that Corey Davis had any expectation going into that conversation that it would be something different.
No.
He had to have known. I mean, if you have any sort of an agent who can not be just a yes man and will actually tell you what's happening, then, and not that you would even need that, but your agent should be like, look, I mean, they're not going to pick up your option. It's very unlikely, so let's move forward and, you know,
prove him wrong
and all that stuff.
Blindsided by this, yeah.
No, heck no. No one knew, everybody knew this was going to happen. Corey Davis is, and this is, I think, a big part of why he was taken fifth. Go through that locker room. I don't think you'll find many people who are more accountable, impressive, any intangible that you want in a professional athlete as far as, you know, work and team first, all these things. Again, make fun of his blocking if you will.
I will.
That's fine. Mike Vrabel likes it. And, you know, Mike Vrabel's never wrong, darn it.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, listen, he's a guy who has the respect of his teammates in the room. He's not going to live up to being five, but I do think this year, with all those things we talk about psychologically, and then with this offense and everything else that's around him, with Ryan Tannehill taking over this offense, and you would think having more chemistry with Davis, I think Davis could have a real nice year.
That's the thing I'm looking for. is where's the chemistry between Tannehill and Davis? Because it really wasn't there last year. I mean, we saw it with A.J. Brown, obviously. We saw it with Jonnu Smith. It never really got there with Corey Davis. Now, I do wonder how much injury or the turf toe, whatever he was dealing with last year. I'm sure there was that was a factor in that as well. But it just never really seemed like Corey Davis had the full trust of Ryan Tannehill. I'm interested to see, especially early on this year, does that look any different? Because if not, I mean, that should probably tell you something about Corey Davis. Because I think a lot of it's on Tannehill as well in order to kind of force that chemistry to get there. You got to work on it. But it seemed to come pretty naturally for everyone else. And I do wonder why that wasn't the case with Davis. Maybe it is just as simple as the injury part of it.
Yeah, and maybe it's just as simple as whatever. The reads led to this, and it just didn't get to Corey. But yes, you would think that there would be better chemistry built. And you look at, first of all, defenses obviously focus on Derrick Henry. A.J. Brown is going to get a lot more attention this year. And Jonnu Smith is the guy of everybody in this offense. I think, like, if you're looking at this from a fantasy football perspective,
keep an eye on that guy.
Yeah, like late in your draft, I'd think about Jonnu Smith because I think he's going to get some red zone looks, and I just think he could. I don't know if he's – well, look, Jonnu Smith's not going to have a season like Delanie Walker had in, like, 2015 for an awful football team that had nothing else going for it.
Right.
But I think he could have a big jump in production. But if you consider that and everything else, I mean, Corey Davis is over there waving his hand like, hey,
throw me the ball.
Got a safety on me. You know, I mean, I think that there is going to be a lot of opportunity for him. And he's good. He's a good player. He's a good receiver. He's not the number five pick. That'll always be tagged to him. But I do. I think it's a lot of people are past that and just like, hey, what can he do? How does he respond this year to this? First of all, can he be healthy? And that's not in his control. But if he is, I really think he could do some things. And I haven't mentioned Adam Humphries, who, if he's healthy, I mean, like, it all adds up to an offense that could be frightening. But I think Corey Davis, for it to truly be, has to have a good number two receiver in the NFL season.
And we mentioned this earlier in the show, and I'm interested to see how this takes place this year in terms of Tannehill taking more shots, throwing up more 50-50 balls, because that was, among many things, one of the areas that I think Mariota really struggled in. If you weren't wide open, if you didn't have like two steps on the guy going down the field, Mariota was not throwing that ball. I mean, he was not going to just chuck it up there and let you go get it for the most part. Now, maybe every now and then he did, but it just wasn't something he looked for. Whereas guys like Rodgers, he'll throw it up to Adams all the time. Mahomes, he'll chuck it up in the air and let Kelsey go get it, or Hill go get it. He does it all the time. I think Tannehill was better than Mariota in that last year, but to your point earlier, Joe, I think there's another level that he can reach. Like, if I'm looking down the field and A.J. Brown's in single coverage and the guy's draped all over him, I still feel pretty good about throwing it to A.J. Brown and his chances of going up and either getting it or at least not letting the defender come down with an interception. I'm interested to see if Tannehill takes more shots like that to this year, both to Brown and even to Corey Davis, who I think can excel at going up to get the ball.
Yeah, I've always thought Corey Davis should be better at that, or maybe he should have had more opportunities. But those two guys, in terms of 50-50 balls and winning physical battles, they should win way more than they lose. I think that he could have a much better overall a season, something like his second year. Maybe that's asking a lot because, again, you have one football and you have a lot of guys who deserve it. But to your point, Mario, that's one of my favorite NFL cliches. You know, Mariota did not throw guys open.
Yeah.
He did not throw guys open a lot. Tannehill can throw guys open better than Mariota can. I mean, I can't say, like, Tannehill, can you get better after leading the league in NFL, you know, QB
in like
rating,
every category,
and
yeah,
having a historically incredible 9.6 per attempt, 70% completion rate. But I think there is some growth with those guys that can still take place.
Completion rate comes down when you start throwing those 50-50 balls, though.
That's okay.
Maybe that's what he's worried about.
You might score more points.
You certainly might, especially like A.J. Brown catches that ball and he's in single coverage. That guy's not tackling. I don't care who it is. You're not tackling him. He's just gone.
And he's the third most enjoyable or least enjoyable guy to tackle on the offense.
Yeah. Derrick Henry.
And Jonnu Smith. Jonnu Smith might be number one. I know that's a hot take.
Nah.
Listen, if you just – see, this is one for your segment we just did.
Okay.
Who would you rather tackle, Derrick Henry or Jonnu Smith? Full head of speed coming at you. You have to try to wrap them up at the chest and tackle them. I think I might pick Derrick Henry.
I think I'd die either way, but
– yeah, that's true.
Probably going Jonnu Smith.
Yeah, which way do you want to die?
Yeah.
Right.
Via death by Derrick Henry or Jonnu Smith? Probably a cooler story for Derrick Henry.
Jonnu Smith is – it with a full head of steam. I mean, anybody who remembers that touchdown he had at Houston 2 years ago,
oh, man.
You're like, wait a minute. Who did that?
Yeah.
He's talk about like just not someone fun to tackle.
When we come back, we will switch gears. Our good friend Adam Vingan from The Athletic will join us, and we'll dive into the Preds. That's next. This is Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rexroad, Marquise Munson taking you through this Wednesday morning. And it's that time of the week. We bring in our good friend Adam Vingan from The Athletic, sponsored by Sealmaster. Adam, what's going on, brother?
First of all, I need to know if Joe can name that song, because I know he is a hip-hop aficionado.
I can't.
That would be Victory by Puffy and Biggie and Busta Rhymes.
Okay, really?
Yes.
Well, I mean, as Munson will tell you, I put my headphones on like right before you came on, so I should have known that. So,
well, if they're not talking about breakdancing, I don't know.
Yeah, Rexro didn't have much time for your song choice, Vingan. Sorry.
Listen, Grandmaster Flash, that's where I stopped with him, 1983.
Before any of us were born, other than you.
Well,
we had a
true.
Lot of shots at Joe today,
yeah,
just about
right.
How old he is. Okay,
old,
I'm cool.
It's old Joe day.
All right, Adam, obviously we saw the other day the Preds make the move not to bring back Dan Mews behind the bench. What was your reaction to that news? Were you surprised at all?
No, I wasn't surprised, just because, one, the Predators talked a lot about making changes, so that is a relatively easy change to make. And two, typically new coaches, especially coaches who are hired in season, you know, do not have the opportunity to form their own staff. And with the exception of Rob Scuderi, who came on as an assistant coach on the same day that John Hines was hired, John inherited Peter Laviolette's coaching staff. So this gives John now an opportunity to formulate his own coaching staff. And it's going to be interesting who he would decide to bring along. You know, one name that, you know, sticks out to me, if he becomes available, is Alain Nasruddin, who was the interim head coach for the New Jersey Devils after John was fired in December. He had been an assistant coach for John Hines since 2010, which includes 5 years in the AHL before joining him with the Devils in 2015. So we saw, for example, how Peter Laviolette and Kevin McCarthy were attached at the hip. You know, certainly if Alain Nasruddin, who was not named the full-time head coach of the Devils, Lindy Ruff, earned that position last month. If Nasruddin is not retained by the Devils, certainly it would make a lot of sense for him to come to the Predators.
So would this be, I guess, like, Scuderi stepping into Muse's spot? I know it's not like you know exactly how everything's going to work, but is it, I guess, like the new hire, would that be more replacing Muse, or is it Scuderi? How do you view that?
Well, Scuderi is not going to be on the bench next season. He's returning to his role as the defense development coach, which in the press release, the Predators said was a planned move. So I believe there are two openings on the bench because they're retaining Dan Lambert. But so you would assume that would be two openings, Dan Muse's spot and Rob Scuderi's former spot. And if Dan Lambert continues to be in charge of the power play, which he was hired to do last summer, then you would assume that the new head coach, the new assistant coach would be in charge of the penalty kill, which was Nasruddin's responsibility with the Devils under Hines. He also was in charge of the defenseman as a former NHL defenseman himself. So that's why I think that could also be a good fit. Another name that I thought might be interesting, and this is purely speculation on my part, but the Pittsburgh Penguins last week let go of all three of their assistant coaches after they were eliminated in the qualifying round by the Montreal Canadiens. One of those assistant coaches, Sergei Gonchar, who played 1,300 games in the NHL, we saw how the Predators' core defenseman took to Phil Housley. So I wonder if Sergei Gonchar could carry the same weight as a soon-to-be, I think, Hall of Fame defenseman who has a lot of experience in the league.
Well, that's interesting because I was going to follow up and ask you, certainly people get fired in this league all the time, and a lot of times it is as simple as, you know, I've got my guys, these are the other guys' guys, I'm going to bring in my people. But obviously, Housley leaving was a loss for the Predators' defensemen. So it's not necessarily, you know, that Dan Muse didn't do a good job, but it's a different voice, and I think those guys certainly credited Housley for the development. So how important, I guess, is it to have someone like that, even though those guys are older now?
Yeah, I certainly think it helps, and you're right that when Housley first came to Nashville, which was when Barry Trotz was still here, you know, Roman Josi, Mattias Ekholm, Ryan Ellis, they were all youngsters. Now they're veterans and leaders on the team. So, but I still think that, you know, having a player with extensive, having a coach with extensive playing experience, I think always helps. And, you know, that's why I thought Gonchar was an intriguing name, just because of, you know, 1,300 games in the NHL, you know, someone who I believe will be a Hall of Famer one day. A different defenseman, I think, in his playing days than Housley, even though he did have a lot of points, Gonchar. But still, you know, a player who carries a lot of weight and name recognition. So if John Hines was looking to add some of that to his coaching staff, I think Gonchar would be an interesting fit.
Adam Vingan on the line with us from The Athletic, sponsored by Sealmaster. And Adam, look, we've been kind of to dissect what changes need to happen with this roster since they were eliminated by Arizona, and I'm not going to get into specific personnel changes because I think at this point that's hard to predict. But what ingredients do you think are missing from this group that they just either don't have or don't display often enough that have to change if this thing is going to get turned around, in your opinion?
Well, I think they need some snarl in their lineup. I think the Predators, look, when you look at the Predators roster, there aren't a lot of, you know, physical players in the sense that, you know, like, who do we think as physical players on the Predators? We think of Austin Watson. We think of Mattias Ekholm, you know, for example. But, you know, Roman Josi, not really a physical defenseman. Same with Ryan Ellis. You know, a lot of their top six players, Ryan Johansson can certainly throw the body around, and so can Philip Forsberg. But I think they need more bite in their lineup. And now, you know, I think a player of the mold of a Tom Wilson or a Matthew Tkachuk or a Brad Marchand, which, you know, those players don't grow on trees. So I don't think they're going to get someone like that, but someone with similar attributes, someone who can produce points and tick off opposing players. I think they need someone like that. Now, I don't know who is out there. You know, the internal option, I think, would be Jakob Trenin. You know, he's not cut from the same cloth as those aforementioned players, but, you know, he is willing to throw his body around, and hey, he did stagger Zdeno Chara with a stiff right punch to the jaw during the regular season, which was no small feat. So he's not afraid to get into the dirty areas and do the hard work. So when I look at this team, I just think, you know, I thought of what John Hines was talking about with Philip Forsberg during the playoffs, the idea of power before skill. I think they need more players that think that way. I think they, you know, never hurts to have more skill, but I think they need someone who's willing to pay a physical price more so than most of the players on the team.
Yeah, I guess with Trenin, a question would be, like you said, everyone took notice with the Chara thing, but also certainly big physical guy. You have to have a certain amount of skill, finish, whatever you want to call it, to go with that too. Do you think that he's a guy who can have the full, well-rounded game here moving forward?
I think so. I mean, he scored 20 goals in 32 games for the Admirals last season. You know, of course, when I was shocked when I went to look at his box, when his statistics, and noticed that his shooting percentage in the AHL last season was 28.2%, which is is unsustainable at any level.
How many empty netters were in there? Like,
I'm not sure, but you know, he certainly has the ability, you know, to score. Now, of course, as we know, and we've seen it many times, that if you're just because you're able to score at the AHL level doesn't mean you can score at the NHL level. I think the perfect example of that from a Predators perspective is Daniel Carr, who was the AHL MVP two seasons ago and struggled to stick with the Predators this season or in the NHL in general over the course of his career. So, you know, I like the idea of Trenin perhaps, you know, playing with Matthew Shane on that second line, just as somebody who will get to the front of the net, you know, create traffic, hunt pucks, you know, and compliment Duchesne with a bit of an edge that his, you know, his most of his line mates, namely Mikhail Granlund and Kyle Turris, do not possess.
And certainly Duchesne struggles to find, it appears.
Yes, I agree.
All right, Adam. So we've had this conversation off and on for the last 2 or 3 years, and I think we've reached a point now where a resolution is going to have to be found one way or the other. And I'm talking about Kyle Turris. You know, I think Kyle Turris is a really good player. I don't think he just came here and forgot how to play hockey. But I'm also willing to say at this point, and you can tell me whether or not you agree or disagree, it's just not going to work here. I don't think we have any evidence that Kyle Turris is going to work here. What do you do now with Kyle Turris? What can you do if you're the Predators on that front?
Well, there are a few options. You know, one, which I wrote about last week, is buying him out, which is going to be a bit painful because you'll have to carry a $2 million cap hit for 8 years. But that $4 million of extra space over the next 4 years when the cap is flat or may not go up that much is not an insignificant amount of money. And you hope by the time the dead money appears on the cap, you know, 2024 through 2028, that the cap has returned to near normal levels and carrying an extra $2 million is not that big of a deal. So that seems like the path of least resistance. You could also try to trade him and sweeten the deal, so to speak, to a team that has cap space, you know, adding in a prospect or adding in a draft pick. But I'm not sure the Predators want to waste draft capital on just trying to get rid of Kyle Turris. And the third option, which I think is, you know, not the way to go, but it is something that teams do sometimes, is just trading a bad contract for a bad contract. You know, it's funny. I saw this pop up on my timeline on Twitter last week. And most of the time when people play armchair GM on Twitter, I want to yank my eyeballs out. But I actually thought that this was an interesting idea because we know how much Predators fans have a torrid love affair with James Neal. What if the Predators were to trade Kyle Turris to the Oilers for James Neal? The cap hit is basically the same. I think Neal is 5.75, but he has, I think, a year less on his contract. So, yeah, you'd be taking back the same amount of money, basically, but you'd have it for one less year. I don't think that's going to happen, but I know some Predators fans would be incredibly excited to have James Neal back because they still don't forgive the team from what happened in 2017 for one reason or another. But, you know, I think the path of least resistance is just buying him out. I agree with you, Robbie. I have a lot of respect for Kyle Turris. I think he's made the best of a difficult situation. But I just think at this point you're paying him too much not to be a key factor on your team. And the best thing to do, I think, for the Predators' standpoint is just to let him go.
Hashtag mind blown on the James Neal thing. And then you would have to – but part of that would be you would have to play him with Yarncroke at all times. Right,
just to really shove that point home. Yes.
Oh yes. Man.
People love James Neal. I mean, and it kind of goes back to what I was talking about the forwards with more bite. Right, like James Neal was like the last guy they had who could do that. Now James Neal is certainly past his prime. Let's be clear about that. But he is a bit of a jerk on the ice. The Predators need more of that, and he was successful here doing so. So if you want to get a past his prime James Neal to get rid of Kyle Turris. Hey, I mean, it's not a completely ridiculous idea, but it was just something that, like, usually when I go on Twitter and someone plays armchair GM, I'm just like, mute, mute, block, mute, block. But this one, I was like, ah, it's not so bad.
You mute and block people that much just for doing that?
No, I'm not a blocker. I'm a muter.
I've
been a heavy muter lately.
Have you?
Heavy muter.
Yeah. There's a lot of reasons to mute a lot of people.
You don't give them, because you don't give them the satisfaction of knowing that you blocked them. Because some people take pride in knowing that they've been blocked by somebody.
They make it their profile pic.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So I think muting is great because you don't give them the satisfaction of knowing that you turned them off to the point where you didn't want to see them anymore.
Like if you are blocked by cameo superstar Jared Stillman, that's like a feather in your cap, right? Yeah.
I can't believe somebody paid Stillman for that. I can't believe it.
And it said that $15.99 is cheap. He should be charging $100. Why don't you get on Cameo, Vingan?
Yeah. We can make this happen.
What would be my price, you think? Do you think I'm more than Stillman?
I would, yes.
I guess.
Actually.
His price range is throwing everything off.
I would charge extra for pretzel cameos.
That's good.
Like,
he's
like
definitely worth more.
$15 for just me, $20 for me and pretzel.
That works. Adam Vingan from The Athletic, sponsored by Sealmaster, has been our guest here on Morning Drive. Adam, thanks for joining us, brother. We appreciate it.
All right, guys. Thanks.
All right. Thanks, we will come back, wrap up the show. Some final thoughts on the Titans before we go. That's next. This is Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
So, Joe, you got anything here you want to ask anything about Cameo or all this other other stuff that you got? You guys like look like high school kids here doing Snapchat.
Man, I wasn't sure if you could read that stuff or not. But yeah, I mean, if you have any thoughts on Cameo, we'll take them.
Yo, something's wrong here. I'm okay, Joe.
No, not again. All
right,
thanks.
You guys. Get the daisies for the hot holes
in my lawn. Oh, Vrabel drops the hammer on Rex Road yesterday in the press conference.
You seemed a little flustered there for a second, Joe.
Yeah, well, you know, another funny thing about this is, you know, like in 2020 reality, so, you know, I'm doing the Zoom in my kitchen. I got my daughter, Caroline, in there. So she, by the way, happy birthday, Caroline. Just turned 10. My wife's in there. So, you know, you're on mute listening to these, but I'm like, listen, you guys got to be quiet because this is a press conference. Caroline had a break from school because, you know, kids are all on Zoom right now.
Sure.
And so when that happens, like they both look like they're like, "Damn, he just dunked on you!
He just absolutely destroyed you, Dad."
I was like, "Man, if I was more prepared, I would have had a better response." You know, my response would have been, "It's insulting to call this high school stuff. It's much more junior high, the stuff that we're chatting about in the Zoom sessions." I hope that doesn't end now, though. I feel like there's still some room for us to have some jokes in the chat of the Zoom.
Well, let me ask you this. Now that you know that Vrabel is reading the Zoom call chats, will you have messaging for Vrabel moving forward? Or do we have to just wait and see what's going to happen there?
Or it might just be, you know, trying to come up with stuff to make him laugh, right?
Which could
probably, like ripping Kaharski is one way that could do it.
Sure.
See, the Stillman cameo thing is, I mean, it was right there for him. He could have had a blast, and maybe he doesn't know.
He may not even know what Cameo
but
is.
But my question, which was, I have three questions for Vrabel. It was like, one is, have you heard of Cameo? Would you like a birthday wish from Cameo?
Correct.
And is there a celebrity in mind that you might pick?
Okay.
Yeah, no, maybe he doesn't know. But see, this is where, like, Robbie Boren, part of the job should be for Robbie to inform Vrabel about this, and then Vrabel can also be in on the fun. And then we can all enjoy the fun of Jared Stillman being on Cameo. That's really all I want.
So do we think by your messaging yesterday, Vrabel has since gone home and done some research on what Cameo is? Do we think that you've made a breakthrough with him?
I hope so. I understand that there's a season to, you know, I get it.
You got plenty of time to get ready for this season.
Yeah, I mean,
there's
look,
so much time left.
You're a pro football coach. You've got a team. You've got meetings. You've got film. But, yeah, why not spend 10 minutes watching the Jared Stillman video that we played earlier on the show? I mean, to me, that's a nice little break from your work day to give you a little chuckle.
Yeah, it just helps you relax a little bit. Look, that's a stressful job being an NFL head coach, especially now with everything going on. You got to worry about your players going home, getting sick. You need a little lighthearted thing to keep your mind off every now and then.
Does Jared do – I mean, I know he does, like, birthday and stuff, but does he do, you know, hey,
Hey, Vrabes.
I know you.
Yeah, what are you doing?
I was just like, hey, pick you up. Hang in there, buddy. Speaking. Yeah, hang in there, little buddy. You know, I know it's a tough week or, you know, it's a tough month, tough year.
See, but I feel like Munson would be a good motivational speaker. He could really get somebody going.
Hey, Joe, look on the bright side. You're not Caldwell Pope.
There you go. You're not Kentavious Caldwell Pope.
KCP? What's wrong with KCP?
He's awful.
Did you watch the game last night?
He wasn't great.
That's what's up with KCP.
He wasn't great.
He doesn't even deserve a nickname anymore.
He can play some D.
It is Caldwell Pope now.
Well, some of those guys are going to have to hit shots at some point.
Look.
Danny Green, they can't survive if Danny Green and KCP both aren't hitting any shots at all.
I threw this out there on Twitter. What is it going to hurt to play J.R. Smith like 5 minutes? Just to see what he's got.
If he gets hot.
Just to see what he got.
Yeah.
Because J.R. Smith, he's a shooter. Shooter, shoot. I'm just saying. Just
a little too much, but yeah.
Just give him an opportunity.
You got a problem on the other end. And you already have a problem
He plays fairly decent defense.
He gets in the way enough.
Yes. He doesn't play Danny Green level intense defense like he does or like Caldwell Pope. They both play really good defense.
That's why they're on the floor and he isn't.
Yeah, but offensively is where they're struggling. Because it's going to suck when it's not only can we not stop their backcourt, we also cannot score. So at least if that backcourt's going to score on us, at least let's get somebody who can score some points too. So I'm just saying, play J.R. Smith for 5 minutes. He don't work out, then cool. Send him on the bench for the rest of the playoffs.
So like heat check right away? Bring him in and just immediate couple heat checks for him.
Yes.
Maybe Munson should not be the motivational speaker because then he'll just immediately start going off about J.R. Smith and Kentavious Caldwell Pope, and you won't be motivated anymore. I think Willie Donick tends
to get down on people a little bit.
Willie Donick, Chase McCabe could do some motivational speaking. I think so.
Donick and McCabe?
Donick and McCabe.
But not McFarland?
McFarland's not the motivational
type. No?
No.
Okay.
No, he's not.
McFarland will get in there after you.
Just like I am.
I think those guys can be gently motivational, right?
Sure.
I mean, I can't imagine either of those two screaming at anyone.
Oh,
I can. Like getting all lathered. Yeah?
Oh, Willie can scream. Yeah.
Never.
Willie gets fired up.
Never seen it.
It's a treat, let me tell you.
Just pumped up. When have you seen
this? Not bad.
This?
He's just pumped up.
He's the most even-keeled guy I think I know.
I know, but he can let loose every now and then.
Okay. Well, why can't he be on Cameo then?
Well, he can. That's what I'm trying to say. You can get some motivational speaker on here.
I think Willie could probably be on Cameo before Jared.
Because I'm not sure.
But he's not.
I'm not sure Jared fills the motivational speaking qualifications. Like birthdays, that's fine. If you want to give advice, I'll even let him do that. I'm not sure if motivational speaking is his forte.
So we can just tell you, let the big dog eat.
Can we have access? So we have access to anything he does. Is that right?
Yes, we do.
Oh, I hope so.
Because there's going to be like a joke one, like, hey, send to your buddy. Like, that one's going to be interesting.
We're going to play it over and over again. That's going to do it for us today here on Morning Drive. Joe, good show.
You too, sir.
Happy birthday, Caroline.
Both of you, sirs. Happy birthday, Caroline.
That's right. Darren, Donick, and Chase. Coming up next, this is ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.